Welcome to the Sexual Healing Podcast, where we two black, gay, 40-something-year-old men talk about life from the top of your head to the bottom of your dusty, crusty feet. I am one of your co-hosts, Dr. Pookie, and at my side is...
Hey, and this is Dark Boy.
Welcome in, Dark Boy. Yes. How you doing this week?
I am good.
Oh, that's good to hear.
Yes, how are you doing?
I am doing okay. It has been an interesting time, very busy. Got a big family event coming up next week, so that's like really exciting.
Oh, yes.
Also a lot of activity. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, you know, it's pretty cool. So I can't complain, but this heat wave been wearing me out.
Yeah.
It's just, I think it was like 94 yesterday, and strangely enough, it didn't strike me as that hot because...
We're used to it places, now.
Yeah, basically, you know, the places I was in were not that bad, and I said, okay, but yeah. So, I don't know. So I'm guessing work is still going pleasantly enough?
Work is fine, you know. Take a couple days off here and there.
All right, that's a good thing.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I have, I'm not going anywhere just yet, but I'll be heading out soon, so I just made some travel arrangements last week, and the travel is approaching, and I'm excited.
Okay, very good.
Yeah, so we'll see what that brings in my direction. But in the meantime, I guess we need to transition into the blacklist because we are both in pretty good state this week. So, take it away.
Yes. So this week's blacklist, we thought we would do our favorite trans actors, actresses, you know. And we always do the list top three. We do 3-2-1. I usually go first, so I will go first.
Okay.
My first one is Miss Electra from Pose.
Okay.
Now, I think her real name is Dominique Jackson.
Jackson.
Yes.
Yes.
So I had not seen her in anything else before Pose. And afterwards, after I did some research and all kind of stuff, I don't think I've seen anything else that she's done, but she's been in other stuff.
I believe so.
Yeah, so I don't know who would have been my number three if Pose was not around. You know what I mean? So I'm sure probably Laverne Cox. Mm-hmm. She probably would have been my number three.
Yeah, she was my number three until I saw Pose, and my number three was also Dominique Jackson.
Oh.
Yeah, because she was... How can you not, you know... Yeah. As we talked about last week, you know, she is the classic anti-hero. And she was just so fierce.
Yeah. And, I'm curious about those cheekbones. I mean, are they real? I mean, were they, you know, whenever I see anybody with cheekbones like hers, I'm like, well, was that, were you born with that? Is that a thing? Or did you get surgery? Because those cheekbones are just super high. Even one of the episodes said something about her cheekbones. So.
Oh, wow. She's actually been on a couple of other things previously. I just did a quick search for her, and they say that she's from Tobago.
Yes. Yes.
So it's fabulous that she's from the land of Winston Duke. And apparently, she is married.
Oh.
Yeah. 18 years she's been with her man. And there's a picture of them here. He's looking kind of interesting. He looks like Jamie Foxx, actually.
Okay.
I don't know if that's her. Wow, from this angle, she looks totally different. But and he looks like Jamie Foxx. But okay, you know, not cross to bear, I guess.
Right.
she is stunning in this picture here. Oh my gosh.
Well, you must share this picture. You must put it in the show notes so that people know which picture you're talking about.
But she also wrote an autobiography.
Okay.
Called The Transsexual from Tobago. I'm guessing your Facebook Messenger is open.
Yeah.
Okay. So I'm going to send it to you there. But yeah, she looks gorgeous. Which she is anyway. I think on the show, her cheekbones are like really highlighted with makeup, I think, because
Some of the pictures, it's not quite as pronounced.
Yeah, I mean, her face looks much more smoothed out, so to speak, where you don't have these severe cheekbones that, you know, characterize Madame Abundance's face.
Miss Electra.
Yeah, Electra was a fierce queen, you know. So, love her. But yeah, I just sent it to you. But yeah, tell me if her husband does not look like Jamie Foxx to you.
Oh, let me open it.
From the side, his profile looks like Jamie Foxx to me.
Let's see. Oh, yeah, yeah. I would agree.
Yeah, it's strange. But apparently his name is Al.
Okay. And 21 years? How long have been married?
Well, they've been in a relationship for 18 years.
Oh, 18.
Was this article written? I don't know when the article was.
October of 2016.
Oh, wow. So they got 20 years together. Go on, Dominique. You get it, girl.
Wow.
Okay.
Yeah, very good.
Yes.
Okay.
So, let us move forward because we know we dawdle.
Yeah.
In the blacklist. Okay. So, who is your number two?
You know what? I accidentally gave it away when I said Laverne Cox earlier.
Okay.
Yeah, so. Miss Laverne. Now, maybe she's the number two because that is the first trans person that I heard of, you know, when she was in, I guess still on Orange is the New Black. I think I maybe made it up to part of season 3 and then I just couldn't do it anymore.
Oh, wow.
Not because of her or anything like that, just that there was one episode where they were dealing with a chicken and I was like, they just lost me with that, so I stopped after that. But you know, I like Laverne Cox. You know, just her character was great. Again, like I said, I'm assuming she's still on the show.
Okay, go on, girl.
Yes. All right. You're number two.
My number two is someone that I have actually met
and
loved dearly. Like, the first time I met her, I was like, I came across from like, your energy is fabulous and I love you. And she's like, oh. It's like, and I am good friends with she and her wife. So my number two is Alexandra Billings.
Okay.
She is on the show Transparent, and she's also a theater professor. She was at Cal State Long Beach for about a couple of years, and she, I believe this past school year, she moved on to USC. So she's, you know, Alexandra is hilarious, very loving. Just, you know, we go to the same church. She's fabulous. She lights up a room. You know, she is larger than life, and I love her to death.
Now, have I met her? Did I meet her one time? Were we in the same place together at one point?
Maybe. I don't know. It's possible.
Okay. Maybe I'm thinking about somebody else. Because I know that two of our friends, they also like Transparent. And two of the people had come in to the coffee shop we always hang out at. And I don't remember if she was one of them or not.
She might have been.
Okay.
I think that could have been her.
Okay. Because
she lives like a block from the coffee house.
Okay.
Yeah, she's at the next corner. So.
Okay. I probably did meet her. Just didn't know. I think I found out afterwards, you know, when they left, what she did. Okay.
She tried to snatch my gay card, though, over dinner one night. So, you know, I just put that out there because I did not know who Lorna Luft was. And I was like, Lorna Luft? Who the fuck is that? And she just looked at me like, she was like, sacrilege, you know? It's like she just gave me that look. And her wife was like, oh, shit, now you've done it. And I just said, what? What is, you know? And so apparently that's Judy Garland's daughter. Okay. So now I know.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah, it's like, well, Lorna didn't do much compared to her mama.
No.
Or I'd know her name.
Well, I mean, a little bit of a side note, but I had a roommate that years ago that was married, had kids, had came out afterwards. And one day, me and my partner at the time had gone somewhere, and it was the village people were playing, you know, the old school group from the 70s and all kind of stuff. And when I told him,
oh, yeah.
He asked, who were the village people? I was stunned. I was like, oh, you just got your gay card, and it needs to be taken right back. Because, I mean, he's older than me, so if I know them, you know, he should have known them.
Well, but where was he from, though?
He lived
was
here.
Was he local?
Yeah.
Oh, there's no excuse.
Yeah, see? So
they were all over L.A.
Yeah, so it was, yeah.
No. So who is your number one?
My number one is not really, this person's not really an actor, but I just think that they're so pivotal in terms of where we are today. So it's Marsha P. Johnson.
I thought you might pick Marsha.
I think I need to do better in terms of learning gay history, just in general. Now, I didn't know that, you know, she was involved in the Stonewall riots and, AIDS activism, all that stuff.
She set it off.
Yeah. And how I even first heard about her was that there was a documentary that was on Netflix that it was called The Death and Life of Marsha P. Johnson. And that's when I first heard about her. And the documentary on Netflix focuses on the suspicion of how she died, because she was found floating in the Hudson River, and people said it was, I think the cops or the authorities said it was a suicide, but other people were like, no, this is not right. So there's a whole lot of weird stuff, and so it was just a very good documentary. It was a sad thing. This happened in 19. She died in 1992. So, and you know, like I said, I didn't know anything about her until I saw this documentary. So I thought, well, I got to put up to number one just because those queens at the Stonewall. Again, I think a lot of us would not be as far as we are if those queens didn't just rise up at Stonewall. So I give them credit.
Oh yeah, absolutely. We speak her name.
Yeah.
Because she, I believe she is the one that threw the brick.
Yeah.
Despite what that little revisionist history movie Stonewall was trying to say.
Oh, yeah.
she's the one that threw the brick, if I recall correctly.
Okay. You're number one.
My number one. Okay, so it was hard to put Alexandra as number two. Because when this question first arose as a blacklist, she automatically jumped to mine. But then I had to remember that there's also a trans woman I love as well, and she goes by the name T.S. Madison.
Oh, yes.
Batty. Oh, she's one of my favorite people on the planet, even though I've never met her. Queen Supreme Court. And before Kaya acted a fool, the Queen's Court, you know, her Bish What You Cookin' series on YouTube, her Is It On? Is This Motherfucking Thing Recording? You know, just, she is infectious. Big dick bitch, just 22 inches? Yeah, 22 inch long weave from the Vine days. Just, she is the model of how you go grassroots and become a global star. Like, she is just, she's a force of nature. I love her dearly.
Yeah, I think you forwarded me some videos or some links to her YouTube stuff, and I actually just probably should just have a regular thing like you do. Just listen to it, you know, all the time, or follow her or whatever. I just haven't done that yet.
Yeah, because she puts up video. I mean, she'll be driving in the car. It's just, you know, she'll go live on Facebook and stuff. Because there's always something going on in her world, and she'll kind of share and and just talk about it. So she is hilarious. Maddie tickles me deeply. So yeah, and you know her. Oh, I think I just sent you the recent episode that she did of Queen Supreme Court with Funky Dineva. That shit had me howling. But yeah, Maddie is my number one. And Alexandra, girl, I'm sorry if you ever listen to this. I do love you, and you're fabulous. But Maddie, she's off the chain. Although I know some folks in the trans community don't appreciate Maddie.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because she's not, you know, I've mentioned her to a couple of trans folk that I know, and they've been like, oh, no, I wouldn't like her. Because her politics are not where they'd like her politics to be, I guess.
Okay.
And she just finally, after like, because she and Kaya, that blew up in, I want to say, early February, was late it? January, early February.
It was that far take. Back?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And actually, they had some live shows in February. But by then, basically, they had already just, the show was basically kind of done. It just wasn't being admitted that it was done because there was still hope that they'd be able to salvage things.
But they had live shows after the blow up.
Yes.
Okay.
Because they were contractually obligated to do them.
Hmm.
And so Kaya, being the bitter Scorpio that she is, talked shit and is still talking shit about Maddie.
Even now.
She never did take Maddie's name out of her mouth. Yeah, even now. Like, Maddie just went off on her last week. Because she was on countless interviews, and she's like, I'm not going to say nothing bad about that girl. She's gorgeous. She's talented. I will always love her, but yeah, we ain't working together no more.
Hmm.
You know, Maddie, that was her line, and she held to it. And she's like, it has been 6 months, and that bitch ain't took my name out of her mouth yet. I didn't had it. Fuck her. And she went off. Okay, so we're going to take on our main topic this week. And we thought we'd go, I guess, into something a little on the heavier side. We're going to talk about growing up, coming out in the heat of the HIV era.
Yeah.
Where folks were dropping like flies.
Yeah.
And what it's meant for each of us to remain HIV negative to this point in our lives. So that's what we're going to do today. So I don't know. You have an opening comment, or shall I jump in as usual?
Well, I will say, now, growing up, I don't remember. I don't know if I remember hearing individual stories of, you know, people dying from AIDS. I paid attention to the news. I didn't know anybody personally at the time that had died from AIDS. So, but it scared me enough that, you know, I didn't have sex with anybody till I was 23. Because I, you know, that for the first time till I was 23, because I was just, you know, worried about stuff. So
that's a profound impact.
Yeah.
I mean, that's, well, I can't tell that lie.
No. You
know? Yeah, I mean, it was weird. I kind of had almost like a short or faulty memory when it came to potential for exposure to HIV as a teenager.
Hmm.
I wasn't having a whole lot of sex as a teen. I didn't really have, you know, outside of the adolescent, you know, fondling and all that stuff that happens. Circle jerks. I never did a circle jerk. You know, but just the stuff that boys do, or some boys do, that never really got sexual per se. I did have an experience when I was 12.
You're pretty young.
And I don't really. Yeah. I mean, it's not. Yeah, that was more serious fooling around. That, you know, blowjobs were exchanged and the like. So, I guess that counts as sex.
Yeah.
I always describe my first adult sexual encounter with another man as in my sophomore year. And it's interesting, sophomore year of college, that is. The interesting thing to me is that I think probably I owe my father a big thanks, because at about the age of, because he, I was like, you know how they, your parents would think your body scent changed after you had sex? Like, once you would have been fucking, you just smelled different. So my father would walk up to me at a certain point and sniff me, and I was like, what? You know, I'm just like, I was like, I bathe. And he was, and I didn't realize he was sniffing to see whether I had been fucking. And so it was very, very odd. And at a certain point, he just stopped sniffing and handed me a box, a 3-pack of Trojan, in the light blue. This was when there was only one brand or one type of Trojans on the market that I remember.
Okay.
So the gold ones wasn't out yet. The silver wasn't out. You know, it was just the blue ones. And he handed me the box of condoms and said, these are condoms. We use these. If you're sticking something somewhere, or it's being, you know, or it's being received, it needs to involve one of these. And that's all he had to say about it.
Hmm.
And because we were doing, you know, sex ed, I was in LA Unified School District at that point. So they had the whole consent with the parents, because they were going into it.
Oh, yes.
You know, they were just like, you know, here's the head crowning. You know, here's what syphilis looks like. You know, that course, they covered it all. And so I had a very clear understanding that, oh, yeah, I don't want to be bothered with this.
Yeah.
But I don't remember them really talking about HIV or AIDS very much. And I mean, that was back in, they weren't going to.
See, and I was trying to figure out when did I was trying to think of what, how did I first hear about HIV? And I really can't think of, like, how I first heard about it. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
But obviously it was there, because it had an impact on, you know.
Yeah. I think for a lot of us, I don't think they referenced HIV or AIDS, but what they did do is they basically instilled this idea of sex, particularly, you know, promiscuity and just random sex, as dangerous. I definitely remember having that idea firmly implanted in my head, and I can't say who it came from. It was definitely a social message.
Yeah.
If that makes any sense.
But doesn't everybody kind of get that message? Just that men usually ignore it?
Yeah, I mean, and that's the thing. That's what's so fascinating to me, because I look at, you know, a lot of these, you know, these straight men, quote unquote conservatives, that are always trying to cast aspersions on us. And I'm like, dude, you and I both know that if women were that available to you, like another man would be for us, you'd be doing all the same skullduggy nasty shit that you accuse us of doing.
Yeah, they just, not more. They're held back because, you know.
Yeah, because, you know, and I mean, it's not to say that women don't want sex and don't want to get downright freaky with it, but they're conditioned to not, you know, to not enjoy it too much, to not want it too much, you know. Or they all kinds of hoes and sluts. And I'm like, girl, throw that pussy around if you want to throw it around. It's like, you know, I'm always like, girl, please. Now, I'm going to call you a hoe, not because you a hoe, but that's just, it's just like a pronoun for me. You know, it's just like, it's not a value judgment. I feel like anybody that's having sex or not even having sex and you're still receiving something for it in the traditional sense is still hoeing. So go on and hoe. Be the best hoe you can be. You know, but it's definitely, for me, the word hoe is not a value judgment. And it's funny because I have this t-shirt from the Boondocks where one of the characters, Riley, is basically saying, I don't see what the big deal is. I'm just saying ho. And it shows him on the shirt. And I was in Manhattan And I went to this bakery at Rockefeller Center. And as I'm about to order my food, this sister behind the counter reads my shirt. And she was like, "How?" And I said, "Is there a problem, sister?" You know, I mean, she really took offense. And I said, "Well, I said good afternoon to you and how are you? And before I could even get to may I have, you in my face hollered at me." I said, I don't know you. I was like, "But you might want to be a better hoe and do your job." Like, before I had to call your manager, because you being a bad hoe right now. And she just, you know, because I remember when she first called me a hoe, I said, "Yes." You know, and she was just taken aback because I guess she didn't get the reaction from me that she expected. And I was like, "I don't mind being called a hoe. It's like, hell, I'm not a virgin. So, you know, whatever the hoe credits are, I'm sure I've earned some of the stripes."
You probably all have.
Exactly. And that's what's so interesting because I want to get his book. Writer, journalist Michael Arsenault, he just put out a collection of essays basically about growing up black and gay in the South and Catholic, and how he basically kind of he's turned away from religion and puts all his faith in Beyonce. Oh. So that's kind of like the title. It's the title of the book. And he was interviewed on NPR on Fresh Air about 2 weeks ago. And it was really a fascinating interview because she was like, "Now, Beyonce, how does that work?" And he's like, "Well, because basically my process of coming to grips with myself, with coming to grips with my fear about having sex," because he was terrified to have sex.
Oh, okay.
Well. Because he grew up in the South. You know, he's our age, or certainly he might be even up to 10 years younger than you or I, because when we were, like, in the 80s, Reagan wouldn't mention AIDS.
Right.
He didn't mention HIV. He just never said it. So it certainly wasn't part of the curriculum in school. But I think he grew up at a time where the word was out there now. We knew what it was, kind of.
And we knew what happened to people at the time, you know.
Yes.
At that time, there were no long-term survivors. At least not the, you know, I think.
Yeah, not a lot.
No, not that many.
Yeah, I mean, there are still some folks from the, you know, from the mid-early 80s that are still with us now. And you're just like, "Girl, how are you still here?"
Yeah, how did you do that?
And I think their bodies were able to tolerate the medications and their immune system was able to be just strong enough to fight off. Because I'm pretty sure all of those guys and all those women, I'm sure they've spent their time in the hospital recovering from and fighting off some shit.
Yeah. They just managed to survive it all.
Yeah. I mean, it would be interesting to have a conversation with a couple of those folks. That would be fascinating. Just to the mindset, where are they now? What matters to them in life, you know, versus what's kind of petty and just doesn't seem to matter much.
Yeah.
That would be a fascinating conversation, I think. But back on our topic, I remember when I was in school, there was this book called The HIV Negative Man. And it was all about looking for support and community, because you had all these systems and support structures that were being put in place for HIV positive gay men.
Oh, but not negative ones.
For those of us. Yeah, there was really nothing, and I'm sure you had some small groups that formed around sexual anxiety and fear of contracting HIV.
Yeah.
And that type of thing, and, you know, do you want to date a guy who's HIV positive, and how do you do that, or, oh, my partner's positive, and I'm negative, what does that mean? You had those things, but just the idea of the regular guy that was still negative, that was maybe concerned about it, that was really struggling with the idea of, oh my God, fucking is death. Like, just the normal thing of you meet someone, you fall for them, you're possibly in what you believe to be a monogamous relationship, and so you're like, well, you know, we're not going to use protection anymore.
Yeah.
And it's like negotiating that question, or just being a single gay man with all these other options walking up and down the street.
Exactly.
Because there's one of the questions that came up in the book was, whereas being HIV positive was seen as a point of identity, you know, there was a grouping around that, there wasn't one for men that were negative. And it's, and it was, the question was, would it be stigmatizing to rally around the idea that you're negative?
Stigmatizing to,
it would, to the men who were positive.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, it's almost like, it's kind of like gay pride versus straight pride kind of thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's kind of what it struck me as. And it was just really quite fascinating to hear that perspective, because it's stuff we don't think about. Because I remember when I first went to college, my freshman year, there was, you know, the Lesbian, Gay, Bisexual Student Union. And there definitely seemed to be a very real HIV positive bias.
Bias against people that were positive?
Yes.
Okay.
Because I think, because, you know, we were college students, the overwhelming majority of us, as far as we knew, were negative. And when I joined that group, I definitely sensed a very big anti-HIV positive, as well as trans, well, back then it was, I guess, transsexual, but we'll just call it an umbrella trans, anti-trans bent as well, you know, because we're talking about a group largely dominated by white gay men. So what else do you expect?
Well, yeah, exactly.
yeah, it's like I, as a black gay man, was virtually invisible in that group, which is why I didn't stick around beyond about 3 meetings. But I did meet a lifelong friend out of that group. So that's one of the positives I can take from it.
Okay.
But yeah, it just struck me, you know, how did you overcome any sort of fear, anxieties that you had in terms of having sex?
I mean, I think I was very careful. Now, I didn't go, this is before Grindr and all that stuff, before, mm-hmm. Well, we didn't even have internet back then, so that tells you how far back this was. But I mean, mm-hmm. I didn't go, so back then, well, I think they're still around, but there are bathhouses, you know. Mm-hmm.
They're still around.
Totally did not go to any, even though I was intrigued, I was curious, I mm-hmm. did not go. I didn't go to any, I still, to this day, have never been to one. And because for me, I thought, well, I mean, this is how, to me, in my mind, that's how people were, that's where it seemed like most of the transmissions were happening, because you go to a bathhouse and you just, you know, it's all these men and it's, you know, no, I mean, it's, I don't know, I guess in a way it was kind of a no holds bar type of thing where, hey, if you were done with this one, you could just go to the next one. And so for me, I purposely didn't go to those. Again, no shade against anybody who did. It was too much for me. And I mean, realistically, I'm not 100% over it. I don't think anybody that's gay now could be 100% over the, you know, HIV. I think, but when I did have sex for the first time, I mean, I think I was with somebody who I took to be a kind of a responsible person, who wasn't out going crazy, who I felt wasn't going to get it themselves and then pass it to me. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So, and I didn't do anything risky with him.
Yeah.
You know? So that's how I just kind of, I don't want to say got over it, because I don't really think anybody truly has gotten over it, but I was just careful. I didn't go to bathhouses. I didn't, you know. And I think that's... And plus, I waited until I was, you know, 23, so...
Okay. Yeah, it's weird. I mean, I think for me, the bigger deterrent to me having... to having an active sex life at a certain point in my life was more my body image than anything else. Okay. It's just like when I think about it, I was like, wait, I gotta be naked? I don't like the way this looks, and that ain't looking right, and, you know, just all those hang-ups. And so I think that was a bigger deterrent. For me, I've always looked at something like fear of HIV as just a necessary evil, and you're either going to allow something that has not happened to dictate what you do, or you're going to enjoy the life right in front of you. You know, so I definitely had very selective amnesia, so to speak, around it when I, you know, when I did become sexually active, because I didn't really do a whole lot in undergrad, but grad school,
you're a hoe.
I found it, I found it very necessary as a stress reliever. It just, you know, because being a doctoral student, it's not for the meek of the week. And you know, I tell my students that all the time. It will wear you the hell out. And so, whatever it is that you need, you have to find something that can relax you, that can ground you, that can kind of put you in a better state. And for me, often that was sex. It was still the pre-internet days. We still had the chat lines. I mean, the internet was around, but it wasn't
nothing like it is now. Right.
Oh, God, now it's like you don't even have to go nowhere. You can just order in. You
know, yes.
It's like, but back then, you know, you still had to put some work into it. And, you know, maybe you were on the phone, you know, chatting and carrying on, and you'd connect that way. But yeah, and so we definitely, you know, me and my road dog, dearly departed, I miss him dearly. Mm. We ran the streets heavy. Just when the weekend hit, it was on. You know, we'd get up in the morning and do our work, you know, because we were still, you know, graduate students, so there was always work to be done. We'd get up and do our work, but, you know, by when the evening came, it was time to get ourselves pulled together, and we was in the streets at night. And then you'd wash, rinse, and repeat the next day, you know. It was just... And then it was like back to work, you know. So Friday night we were out, you know, out cutting up. Saturday night we were out cutting up. Sunday maybe a little cut up, you know. But class, you know, was the next morning, so you couldn't get too wild with it unless you wanted to be dragging through the day, which sometimes we did.
Yeah, I'm sure. You did.
Yeah, I mean, you know, we did our dirt, and that was really how we survived. And I think for a while, when you look back on something like that, you're like, oh gosh, wow, I cannot believe I did all that, or wow, I'm still here, wow, I'm still healthy, blah blah blah. And I have to admit, there was a bit of shame associated with all that.
You mean going why? I mean, just
in reflecting on it, you know, looking back, like, oh my gosh, wow, I can't believe I did all that. And you know, you're just like, well, hell, that's what life brought your way. So you're either going to do it or you're not. And I did. And I had fun. It's like, and I learned things about myself and about other people. And I met some really cool people along the way. You know, and so it's really... It's just a fascinating journey. And I think, you know, you and I are at an age where we can look back on that, look back on our 20s and even our 30s with a certain amount of wisdom.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, which is still to come. We certainly don't know a quarter of what we will learn in this lifetime, but we have enough distance now from those days to look back and be like, okay. Can't believe I thought about it that way once upon a time.
Right.
You know, happy I moved past that shit, because, you know, sex is good for you. it's just like that kind of thing, as opposed to like, oh my gosh, I was out tricking. Oh, you know. Yeah, it's like, oh.
Did you ever have an HIV scare? Like you were worried that maybe that you had gotten it and you had to get tested to find out?
Oh, yes.
Okay.
Oh, yes. I did. There were two incidences jumped to mind. One where a condom slipped off.
Okay.
And another where I felt like the guy was intentionally trying to...
stealth, or whatever that's called.
No, he wasn't stealthing. Well, if you want to call it a stealth blowjob. He was basically... he was calling himself giving me a blowjob, and it was a little on the toothy side. And then I caught him trying to take some of the pre-cum off of himself and put it on my dick after you didn't bit me and abraded my dick and all this other stuff. So, of course, he got punched in the head so he could get that thing on me and put out. But it was like I didn't know if he had already, you know, because it's not uncommon for somebody to jack their dick while they're sucking yours.
Yeah.
You know, and then give you the two, you know, the double-handed twists, you know, while slobbing on the knob. You know, it's not, that's a textbook move. So I didn't know whether he had already slathered some of his, you know, potentially, you know, infected pre-cum on me before he decided he was going to try to chafe up and scratch my dick to, you know, and bite it to pieces. Which, you know, because it was definitely a thing of like, hey, you know, the first time somebody gets a little toothy with a blowjob, you're going to check them. But the second time, I'm done. You know, and so I don't know.
Maybe that's when you should have punched him in the head after this.
Well, yeah, I mean, when the job got toothy, I was basically like, oh, goodness. You know, and I was already like, yeah, I was about to end it anyway. But then when I saw what he was doing, that's when I punched his ass in the head. You know, and basically said, get off of me. And if you touch me, I will beat you all the way down to the ground. and he believed me because I really would have, he would have really met all of me had he,
go ahead. Sorry.
No, I was just going to say, had he decided to test me, he would have met all of me, and he would not have liked it. So, yeah, I just basically said, you need to put your shit on and get on up out of here. So,
okay.
Yeah, and, you know, and it was just, it was a lot. And it was also just really... It was a strange little scene anyway, because he came over with his leather harness on and all that, and I'm like, okay, you didn't say anything about being into leather like this. I certainly didn't request it. What is all this? And at the time, I really just did not understand the leather culture like that. I just was like, I don't get this. I have a much better appreciation for it now, but back then I was like, I don't get this. Like, what? Why are you wearing all this shit? This is not the kind of scene that I even talked about. But you had a question. I'm sorry.
No. I was going to say, I had like one minor scare, and mine was because I got tested, and this was back before I think they had the quick, I don't even know what they call it, but where you could get your results really quick. You had to wait a while.
The OraSure.
Yeah.
Yeah, the OraSure or Quick, something like that.
And so I think I got tested, and it was just kind of like, it was like, I want to say that there was like some study that was being done, and somehow they got my name and number, And they said, oh, well, we're doing this study on gay men or whatever. And so, you know, I had to go down to the center in Long Beach and got tested. And so I probably had to wait a week. I don't know if it was a week or two. So I didn't go get tested thinking that I had, you know, become positive or that there was a chance that I was. Mm-hmm. I was doing it for the study. But then when I went to get the results, the girl said something like that there was something, because, you know, when they did test your antibodies, you know, mm-hmm. and so there was something that showed up a little bit weird. So it wasn't negative, but it wasn't positive either. And they said, and I forgot what the girl told me, because sometimes if you had a vaccination or some kind of, you know, sickness as a child, the test may be picking up those antibodies. So not necessarily HIV. So then I had to wait like another week or two after that to be said, yeah, you know, So that was the scare. It was still a little bit scary, but it wasn't a true scare, like, you know, like you said, like a condom had broke or something like that, or slipped off. But I was just curious if you had anything like that. But I guess, yeah, and you have. So.
Oh yeah, I mean, I remember wasn't the first test I had done, but you know, it's just like whenever you do go in for a test, you remember every piece of ass and every dick you didn't swung on.
Right.
You know, and so you're just like, oh gosh, you know, and you're just like, yeah, I was careful, but nothing's foolproof.
Yeah, exactly.
And then you
yeah.
get into the whole thing of, well, you know, if it is positive, I'm going to have to deal. And it is just this whole idea of, I know it's human psychology to think about things in those terms.
In the worst terms.
Yeah, and to just to imagine and you know, fatalize and everything else. I just remember, like, there's one time I got tested for life insurance, and like 3 weeks later I talked to these folks and they hadn't even submitted my sample for testing because of some form that wasn't signed. And it wasn't like the consent form, because, you know, nowadays, actually it's probably been the case for the last 6, 7, 8 years, if not longer, people can't just test you for HIV.
Right.
Like, you have to consent thoroughly for that. And they cannot give you the results over the phone, which is also a pain in the ass. And so they had, you know, I was freaked out about that because I was definitely, you know, in the midst of my sexual spring. And I was handling my business, you know. That's when I was running up to L.A. 3 and 4 days a week, you know, every weekend, and just, you know, finding me pieces and in Long Beach and L.A. and the Valley and all parts in between. You know, I was out there tossing them. And so I said, well, I know there are some positive men out there, and I've probably had sex with more than one.
Yeah.
So, moment of truth. And I was disturbed when they took the test, because that was an oral test, by the way. So they would have had my results back within, I think, as part of their processing, it would have been a week. They come back to me 3 weeks later, because I called the woman, like, hey, you have my test results, you know, what's the next step, what's going on? Because obviously if it came back positive, they weren't going to give me insurance.
Okay.
And so I was trying to get my results, like, hey, can you talk to me here? And then they come back by the house 3 weeks later, if not 4 weeks, and she hadn't even submitted my shit.
Oh my gosh.
I was furious. And I'm sitting here like, you got me worried and fucked up like this all this time,
and you haven't done anything.
You could have sent me a simple phone call or made a phone call, like, hey, you know, we had a delay. You didn't respond to any of my messages. I was looking at her like, bitch, I should slap you. I mean, that's really where I was, and I was just ready to tap that ass, but I held it together. But it took an effort. But yeah, I don't know.
I was so before I met my my husband, mm-hmm. I was seeing a guy I'll just say I was stigmatized by him. So,
That happens.
Yes. And so I was, it had been, I don't know, I think I was seeing him maybe for about a year at this point. And so I was like, I was ready to kind of go to the point where it's like, you know, we don't have to use protection anymore and all that kind of stuff. Because he had a very, what I would consider a very healthy fear of being, so I didn't think of him as being the type that was going out and doing a bunch of stuff. So I was like, hey, you know, I felt safe with him to say, hey, you know, let's, you know, we don't have to use the condoms anymore. We're ready. You know, I was ready. And then literally right when that was happening, I found that he was sleeping with some other person. And so obviously he didn't do that. I never told him. I never got the chance to tell him that, hey, I wanted to, you know, take it there, you know, not use condoms anymore. But never got to do it. So that was a little bit and you know what? That is when it was after this that I ended up with this study thing and where I ended up taking a test. And that is why, to a certain point, even though I wasn't really truly that worried about it, the possibility of being HIV positive, I guess, was not zero, because I didn't know how long he had been sleeping with this other person. I didn't know who the other person was. I'd never met him, never talked to him. So, just, you know, interesting, you know.
Wow. Yeah, and that is fascinating, because it's, I definitely remember at certain points feeling like, oh, okay, because of the way this guy conducts himself, I'm probably okay.
Yeah.
Like, and it wasn't so much a thing of considering, you know, not using condoms. It never got to that point, but just the idea of how much risk am I taking on with this guy on a base level. And so that was definitely part of that process of going through trying to figure out, I guess, negotiating risk is a good way to put it. And I guess, you know, the thing that always bugged me over the years is, like, I definitely got frustrated, for a while, where I was just like, can I not just have sex? Like, you know, it's like, can I not just encounters a guy that I'm interested in, he's interested in me, and, you know, we just do our thing, and I'm not having to make all these plans in my head and have all these other things I have to be concerned about and guard against and you name it. It just got very frustrating.
Yeah, see, and that's what I was trying to do with this guy that I was seeing. I was like, you know, it didn't work, but...
Yeah, because you're like, okay, you know, is my condom supply up to par? Do I have, you know, and even like if I'm with someone, I'm sitting there looking like, I'm looking like, okay, what kind of lube they got? Okay, is it water based? All right. What's this? You know, like checking out supplies and stuff. I'm just like, oh my gosh, it's so exhausting. It is exhausting.
Yeah, and you know,
go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, it leads to another thing, but there are people out there who are so stressed about trying to avoid HIV or the fear of getting it that they actually go out and become positive on purpose just to get that fear out of the way and over with.
Oh, yeah.
And when I first heard that, I was like, well... Bug chasers was the first thing that, you know, that, at least that's the term that I've heard referred to those people that want to do that. To a certain point, I understand, because then sometimes the fear of getting something or worrying about it or thinking about it or constantly having to trying to work to avoid it can be overwhelming. So,
yeah,
I get it. You know, doing that. And I think part of it is because, you know, some of the ads that you see in the newspapers or the magazines or whatever, you know, they have these ads for all these the medicines, and basically you see happy looking people, you know, take this pill and you'll be fine. So I think it does make it a little bit easier for people to like, well, if I become positive, then I just take these pills and I'll be okay. And so I think that stress is gone. That doesn't have to say that HIV doesn't have its own set of other stresses that I guess, I mean, I don't know what that's like, so I can't say that, but I don't know. I mean, just curious what you think about the bug chasers.
Well, you know, the bug chaser phenomenon, I know there was those guys obviously exist for various reasons, although I think that I don't know if I would call every person that has actually, when you talk about like bug chaser, this is like a nuanced thing, first of all, for me. A bug chaser, I feel like, is someone who does go out there actively seeking to be seroconverted,
yeah,
and they eroticize it, as opposed to the guy that's like, I'm just tired of playing Russian roulette every time I have sex. Even though they're taking their precautions, these are the guys that are just kind of burned out,
yeah,
on remaining negative, and they're just like, fuck it, you know, and I'm just gonna go out there and just do my thing, whether it's protected or not. I don't think those guys qualify as bug chasers.
No, I agree with you. I agree with you. Yeah, I agree with you there.
Yeah. Yeah. But I definitely, I mean, I can relate to the idea of just, as I said, sex being exhausting when you think about there's this, you know, there are all these different infections and diseases out there. And what was it, the book, The Ins and Outs of Gay Sex? I don't think it's by Tim Moran. But it was a book that was published, I think, in the early 90s, maybe, late 80s, or that may have been like a second or third edition of it. If you ever read that book, you will be like, I'm not sticking my dick anywhere, and no one is sticking a dick anywhere near me. Because it talks about all of the microbiological shit that's just itching for an opportunity to invade your body. I mean, and it's just like, after you read it, you're just like, hell, HIV is not the thing to be afraid of.
It's all this other stuff.
Yeah, it's just like other naturally occurring infections in the environment. You know, obviously you have the ones that are that are so much wrapped up in sex, you know, syphilis, gonorrhea, those different things, but you have just all this other stuff. You're just like, oh my gosh. And it's just overwhelming. It is really overwhelming. So I don't know. It's just strange. I'm not sure where I was going with that comment.
Oh no, that's fine.
Yeah, but I don't. Yeah, it's fascinating to me. And I think it'll be interesting to have this conversation. I want to try to find like a member of Onyx that we can possibly interview. Because I think it would be interesting to look at how they, as leather men and men involved in various fetish communities, how they approach sex and the specter of these different diseases out there. And because it's a brotherhood, so to speak, do they view risk differently? And they may not. It's not to say that, oh, because it's a brotherhood, they're like, oh, everybody's good. No, that's not the case, I'm sure. But I'd be curious to find out how they approach it and how other potentially closed groups of, you know, closed sexual communities, not to say the Onyx is closed, but...
Well, yeah, other, but I know you what know, you like, mean, yeah.
Yeah, like you got a group of five or six guys that they get together, you know, every other week or once a month, and they, you know, they have their sex party, orgy, hang out, play cards, you know. It's like, because they're out there.
I imagine that, know, I was in some of these places they have, there was one, now I don't remember, I want to say it was out in Palm Springs, but I don't remember, that there was, mm-hmm. that there was someone, I don't know who the person is, they have, I guess, a very big backyard in Palm Springs, and it's private or whatever, and I guess they have sex parties quite frequently. And I think, if I remember right, they have a very strict rule that everybody's got to wear a condom. Now, I don't know how they mm-hmm. monitor it or how they, you know, enforce that, but I mean, I guess, you know, people are doing so. I just wonder, maybe Onyx might be doing something similar, or I don't know.
I don't know. I have to think that there is probably some sort of understanding, and I don't know, like with the Onyx brothers, I don't know a lot about the inner workings of the organization because I'm not a member.
Yeah, me either.
But I do know that when they have, you know, there are different tentpole events for different chapters of Onyx and also in the larger leather community, you know, things like IML and Claw and Mid-Atlantic Leather, you know, these different major events out of the year. And then you have the chapters with their different parties and things that they have at bars and the like. I'm sure there are private gatherings and play parties that happen, and I have to think there are ground rules for those. I'm like, if you're involved in any sort of sexual community, not only do you need to understand the ground rules for that community before you participate in it or accept the invitation, but you also need to perhaps contribute some ground rules of your own if it's not, if the things there that are not comfortable to you.
That's true. Yeah.
And
I would agree with that.
I've known folks that have joined sexual communities and there were things going on there that they were really uncomfortable with. And it's like, well, you either need to say something or you need to exit. There's no one saying you have to remain in this group, in this environment. If you feel like you're being put in danger, then you need to exit.
Yeah.
And it was just really strange that they didn't feel like they could do that. Or it never occurred to them to do either of those things. They just toughed it out. And, you know, I mean, if it's like somebody, oh, this guy has body odor, it's like, okay, well, then you might want to leave him alone. But if you're very concerned about not contracting HIV or other sexually transmitted infections and you insist upon condom use, then you need to make sure that this is a condom-based party.
Exactly, yep.
And this guy didn't do that. And he ended up getting booted out of that community because he was basically a quote-unquote prissy wallflower, as he was described. And I said to him, I was like, well, yeah, I would have called your ass that too. Because from the outside, in their mind, look, this is a anything goes environment. If you wanted to use condoms, you need to say to people, I only use condoms. And then they're either going to say yes or no. But instead, you decided to just enter this community and hope that they read your mind about what you were and were not comfortable with. And then when they put your ass out, you're all, woe is me.
Well, yeah, how can you, to me, if it's, you know, no holds barred or there's, you know, to me, I mean, I would need more information. Like, okay, well, what, how far do you guys really go? You know, make sure you can't join that and then expect everyone to bend around you, especially if it's an established group. So, yeah, that might not have been the might not have been the smartest.
this particular person, he just doesn't fit in a lot of places anyway. He just doesn't. Because part of it is that's just his personality. The other part is he just doesn't communicate, you know. And it's something you said earlier about men that are really concerned about contracting anything. I've dated a couple of guys that were very much, I would actually classify them as disease phobic, to the point that
it wasn't enjoyable.
I felt like it was what?
It wasn't enjoyable to.
No, it wasn't. It was totally unenjoyable. And I know with one of them, I basically confronted him and said, you know, I feel like you view me as a disease vector. So do we need to go get tested? Because I'm not satisfied here. And I feel like you're holding back some aspects of your sexuality, and if you're not holding them back, this definitely ain't gonna work, because what you're trying to do is just not my cup of tea. So it was just strange, and he really just kind of looked at me like a deer in the headlights, and I said, dude, what is going on here? It did turn out that he was decidedly anxious about, you know, contracting anything. And he had his reasons for it.
You know, and that's his deal, I suppose, you know.
Yeah. You know, and I just, because it was also just this thing of, he would get a little judgy, you know, we're discussing our sexual histories, not so much like everybody we had sex with, but just like the different things we've done and different things we've learned that we've liked. It was just like, oh, you like to do that? Wow. How did you find that out? You know, not so much like, ugh, but that's an odd one, you know, or, okay, how did that discovery come to, you know? And it was just, I just found that at times I was definitely being judged.
Okay.
And I just said, this ain't gonna work. It just, yeah, I just was like, wow, you gonna come at me like that? Okay. So, I don't know. I think we all have our own cross to bear when it comes to this kind of stuff. I often feel like not even the outside community minimizes how a lot of us have felt over the years. This idea of being overly concerned about STIs and STDs. Because I feel like if you compare our concerns and our anxieties to what the average person with HIV is dealing with, it just seems to pale in comparison. But it at the same time, I had to kind of realize that it may pale in comparison in one regard, but overall, it is still a major issue in my life.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, so how do we create that space for us as, you know, men that have managed to remain HIV negative, no matter our history, but how do we also be supportive and affirming to our siblings that may not be negative anymore and that are really dealing with some heavy-duty shit?
That's
always been the challenge.
Yeah, because to me, like you had mentioned earlier, if there's a group created for HIV-negative men, then it could come across as, you know, being against the guys or kind of judgmental or whatever in the eyes of the people who are positive. So to me, that's the like, how do you balance that? I don't know the answer to it.
Yeah, and I think, you know, because I have actually been in some groups that have been mixed in terms of sero status.
Yeah.
And I've definitely felt like when I've brought up some of these things, you know, some of the men in the room who were positive really were kind of like, bitch, please, you know, that ain't shit compared to blah, blah, blah. I'm just like, wow, I don't, you know. Yeah,
but see, I would say they probably heard so much, you know, that they're tired of, you know, they're tired of hearing all the different things. Even though what you're saying would have been valid, I think I kind of think that might be over. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
they're over it themselves.
But the tough part of that is, I would like to think that there's some commonality where you could have a mixed status group like that, because if you have them separated, the stigma is already implied, even though it's the only thing separating us, so to speak, is an arbitrary HIV status, which those guys that are positive are handling it in very different ways. They see it in different ways. There were positive men in the room that totally understood where I was coming from when I made my statement, and they were very supportive and affirming, but there were others that were just like, bitch, please, that ain't shit. And it just really kind of, you know, it pissed me off, but I also understood. And then I also felt a little out of pocket because I turned to them like, bitch, really? And it's like, I didn't know how to feel about it.
Yeah, both sides are valid, though. That's the thing. And so it's...
Yeah, and it's like, should it... I don't know if we really should... I feel like segregating the groups in that way really causes more problems than it solves. If that makes any sense. And maybe that's Pollyanna on my part.
Yeah, well, that might, I don't know.
I mean, that might be wishful thinking.
I do know. So, I mean, one thing that might be a good way to do it is maybe not have the groups. Well, so, you know, there's a convention that, you know, me and my husband have gone to several times. And, you know, it's a black and white man together convention. I'll just say it. And so what they do is during one day of the convention, they have caucuses. And one caucus is called the Black Caucus, and one is called the White Caucus. And so they have separate meetings, and then afterwards they all come together to discuss what everybody else talked about. So the combined caucus. So maybe that's a way to do it, where people, you know, each side gets to have their separate discussions, but then everybody comes together to talk about what was... discussed. I don't know. That might be a way to do it where people are not necessarily put out. You're not having a separate group only for the HIV positive, negative people or the positive people, and nobody else who's doesn't fit that can come in. You still have separate, but then you come together. That might be a good way to do it. Who knows?
Yeah, because I've certainly sat through some planning conversations where they're like, well, how do we divide everyone up? Because we want to have folks that identify around a certain issue or demographic to have their safe space where it's closed for them to consider their issues and not have to explain anything. And it's like, I get that. And I definitely think it's important. So I'm wondering if maybe that group that I was in should not have been structured that way as well, where we maybe start separately or we start together and say, okay, guys, thanks for coming out. You know, tonight, you know, we're going to talk about this. So start thinking about your thoughts around it. In the meantime, we're going to check in and then we're going to split up into our two groups. And then we'll come back together. Maybe that would have worked better. I think it probably would have, because it just, because you don't know what folks are thinking about walking in a door. I think about when I've had a couple of dalliances and I've not been in a good headspace where I'm just really particularly anxious about, you know, being intimate with this person because maybe it's the first time. And it's just not a good scene. And I imagine that they have to think, what is wrong with this dude? and they're maybe having sex with the unfortunate representative as opposed to the usual guy that's going to be there. Yeah, I don't know if that makes any sense.
No, it does. It does.
It seemed profound at the time, but I think just this idea of understanding people's struggles that they're bringing into a room. I think that's what I'm kind of getting at there. So, but we're a little past our allotted time.
Okay.
So I think we should wrap and you know, put this one in a to-be-continued mode.
In the can, so to speak.
Yes, in the can. We got all these to-be-continued topics. So, yeah, but I think definitely maybe next time we talk about this, we have a guest to provide another perspective.
Yeah.
Maybe a couple of guests.
I think so.
A decade up from us, a decade or two down from our ages, and kind of see how they approach it, because they grew up in an era where HIV and AIDS
was always around.
AIDS was far less common. Well, it was always around, but AIDS was far less common, and HIV basically became a chronic disease like diabetes. It's like, if you manage it correctly, you'll be fine. If you don't, it will fuck you up. It's just like, I mean, it's really, it's kind of that way for people whose bodies are tolerating the medications and they're undetectable and so on and so forth.
Yeah, but I was talking about the people who are younger. You have somebody that was born in, you know, 1990, and they've never been alive where HIV wasn't around. You know what I mean?
Yeah, well, and I think also, I definitely agree that those 90s babies, it was very, very present. And it was definitely, I think probably their biggest scare would have been like the down low phenomenon, maybe. Where it was just viewed in this very nefarious light. But yeah, it'd be interesting. Okay, well, we'll have to workshop that idea and get it together.
Yes, we will.
Yeah, we'll have to work that out. Okay, so I guess we will, did you have a closing word, or shall we just move forth?
My closing word, I mean, just everybody just, you know, be safe, make sure you know who you're with, that, you know, that they're, you know, not trying to, I mean, we briefly talked about it, but not trying to stealth you or anything like that, and just, make sure you're safe, and make sure you protect yourself. And that's pretty much it. If you already have HIV, make sure you're taking your medicine. Make sure you're, you know, keeping your viral loads down, and, you know, informing any, potential sex partners. You know, the basics, I suppose.
Okay. Yeah, I guess I would just say that protect yourself. It's your job, not anyone else's. HIV is certainly a major player in the game, but there are some others that are far older and you also can't get rid of. So beware of those things as well. And, you know, live in the moment, but be aware of what's to come. You know, just, yeah, don't do anything you'd be overly ashamed of and really can't fathom why you did that. You know, if you ask yourself, if you find yourself asking that question, like, why in the world did I do that? How did I do that? Be like, well, shit, it was good. Right. If that's your answer, then you cool. Be like, it felt good, I wanted to. If that's not your answer, then you may want to reconsider your behavior. You know, regret is a terrible thing. But don't do anything until you're ready to do it. And don't do anything you don't want to do. It's like,
yeah.
Yeah. It's okay to explore and be creative, but respect yourself, protect yourself. That's all I got. All right.
Yeah, we shall move on. Yes.
Yes, to Abrista being asked a question. And the letter this week is very short. I will call her Melissa. And Melissa is contemplating getting a boob job.
Boob job?
Boob job, okay. Yes. She wants bigger girls. And she wants to know, should she do it? She didn't say much else. It's like, she's rather, I'm like, Melissa, you didn't give us much to work on,
girl. Yeah.
Much to work with. But I felt like it was still a valid question.
No, it is. I guess, I mean, she's doing it for herself. She's not doing it because some guy is pressuring her to do it, I'm assuming.
Probably want to answer it in both contingencies. I would say if it's for someone else, don't do it. It's you know, your skin's being cut into. There's bruising that happens. And there's those things got to settle. They could go wrong. They could be lopsided. They could put your nipple back in the wrong place. All kind of shit could go wrong, girl. And sometimes they just don't look right.
Yeah. All that said, I mean, yeah, there's the risks and all that stuff. I mean, if you want to, well, I'll give two answers. I think if you want to do it because you it's going to make you feel beautiful. You're not doing it for somebody else. Nobody's pressuring you. Then I would say go ahead and do it, as long as, you know, obviously you're doing it with a real doctor. Don't be going to nobody's garage or any, you know, like you hear about these people getting their butt worked on. Go to a real person, you know, that knows what they're doing, that has experience and all that kind of stuff. I would say if you're doing it because it's going to make you feel good, fine. To me, go ahead and do it. Make them as big as you can handle. The other answer I would say is, I don't know. I mean, for me, again, I'm not, obviously I'm not into women, so, but I would say, I don't think there's anything wrong with loving what you have. I don't know if you have to surgically alter. I mean, do you really have to surgically alter to feel good, or can you work with what you got?
Exactly.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's kind of all I got for her, for Miss Melissa.
Yeah, I would have liked a bit more detail, but I think I really thought the question was good in terms of just overall body modification and really kind of accepting your body and learning to love it.
Yeah.
Is there... We all have some sort of quote-unquote flaw about ourselves that we'd love to amend or correct. But by and large, I feel like someone else looks at us and they're interested. They already know about that flaw. Your stomach's not as flat as you'd like it to be, but they see it and they don't care. They like it. I have come across some men with, you know, basically titties, moobs, as I call them, you know, man titties. And they were like, you know, for a long time I was fucked up about these titties, but then I came across a brother that liked these titties and they have become like sources of pride. And so Melissa, if you are not happy with your rack, not every guy wants big ass titties. More than a handful is a waste for some. I think that, and it's like if you get the boobs done, are you going to be content with yourself? Like, why are you doing all this in the first place? Because it's major, and the healing is not fun. Unless you have a good pain tolerance, you don't want to fuck with it. So. You know, I know some folks that have gotten work done and they've overall been happy. And it's one of the best things they did. I know some other people that were like, I don't know why I did this to myself.
Oh, really? Like, so they got this.
Yeah.
And, okay.
Well, and it wasn't like they were unsatisfied with the result, but it still didn't make them feel any different about themselves. Like, they did it to fix some perceived flaw and the flaw was fixed and they still didn't feel
any better
than they expected to. And it was just like, well, yeah, sweetie, it wasn't the flaw. It was how you viewed yourself that was the problem. So how do you fix that? I always feel like, you know, you've got to learn to be okay with whoever is staring back at you in the mirror every morning. Particularly when you get out the shower, are you cool with what you see? And if you're not, it's not necessarily an invitation that you need to fix it, but maybe that you need to kind of change your perspective on what you see. Because that's who you are. That's, depending on your religious beliefs, that is what God created you to be. So you need to be the best you that you can be with what you got. Now, if you want to exercise and tone up some shit, okay, tone it on up. But don't go under the knife. I don't know. But I don't know the psychology of being a woman and not being happy with my breasts.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's the shape. I don't know if it's the size. Maybe they're starting to lose the battle to gravity. 5 to 10 years earlier than you'd like them to. I don't know. But it's often like what I see with men and male pattern baldness. You know, there are guys that are like 21 that already have a damn cul-de-sac on their head. And I'm just like, oh my God. Like, that's the thing that tripped me out about college. Like, I get there and I see several guys.
They're already bald. Just, or balding.
You know, balding, looking like 45, 60 year old men. I'm just like, what the hell? You know, and somebody was like, yeah, male pattern baldness starts early for some. And those guys, they were still out there catching. They were still out there, you know, getting their women and doing their things. Because they accepted who they were. And they found folks that appreciated what they brought to the party. So, I don't know, Melissa. And for all the other folks out there contemplating body modifications, you know, we'd love to hear from you. There's a different perspective, I'm sure. I mean, I've thought about getting some lipo. Okay. It's like, you know, can we reduce these love handles to like handles, you know, maybe? They're not outrageous, but they're there. You know, can I do a little something to flatten my chest a bit more? You know, all these different things. I've thought about it, and then I've just been like, you know what? I have not had a problem finding folks, you know, down to have sex with all this and just love it.
Okay, yeah, so see, so.
why would I change it? And I've met some men that were ready to put a ring on it. They weren't a good fit for my life, right, and for me, but they were ready to put a ring on it, you know? And so it's like, believe that. Let them believe that you are intrinsically beautiful until you can believe it. Let them prop you up. But don't be in a major rush to cut yourself open. But that's all I got. Shall we move on to helping a brother
out?
We
shall.
Okay.
This one, I'll call him David.
Okay, David.
Yes. So I'm a married 35-year-old man who for the past couple of years has been having homosexual thoughts and feelings towards guys. I've chatted with a few guys online, but that's all. These feelings are getting stronger and stronger, and I'm finding it difficult to ignore. I love my wife very much, and I don't want to hurt her, but part of me just wants to perhaps try to see if it's a genuine feeling I have or just something that will pass. Should I tell her what's going on with me? Do I hook up with someone to see if this is a real thing? I'm worried about hurting someone I love or them finding out. Or do I just ignore all of this and miss out? Help and advice would be very much appreciated.
Well, this is quite the catch-22, is it not,
David? It is.
I would basically say, depending on the nature of your relationship with your wife, if you feel like she, even if you determine that you explore this in the concrete and you're like, oh no, this ain't for me, is she a woman that's going to be able to bounce back from knowing that you were thinking about it and can continue to build a life with you? If you do not believe she is that person, then you probably don't need to engage her in conversation with this just yet until you know. If you don't want to go the route of just going out there and seeing if this is really what you want, maybe you go into counseling and talk to a professional.
That's what I was going to say.
You know, yeah, let them help you figure out whether this is just delayed curiosity, some shit you should have taken care of at 15 or 16 or 13, or had your college fling when it, you know, the stakes were much lower, or is this really how you're wired, or are you bi?
Yeah.
You know, a lot of people like to act like bisexuality does not exist and pansexualism doesn't exist, but it does. you know, I myself am attracted to all sorts of people. I'm not trying to have sex with them all, but I'm intrigued by them. So, I think because the stakes are so high for you with your marriage, I don't think you want to just go out there and have sex with a guy.
Right, I agree.
I think it would help. Yeah, I think it would help for you to work with a professional to figure out what's happening. Now, if you were single, David, I'd be like, child, what you waiting?
Yeah.
Go get you some. But because you're married and we want to affirm, you know, loving relationships on this show, whether it's love for a lifetime or for the moment, I would suggest that you maybe not include your wife in the conversation just yet. If you do determine that you are, in fact, wired that way, then you may want to invite her into therapy with you to start the process of basically dissolving your marriage. But I will let Dark Boy talk because you know how I do.
The only thing, you know what I would say? So, yes, if your wife cannot, if you don't think your wife can handle this, handle hearing this, or can't bounce back from it, if it ends up not being that you, you know, not a thing that you want to do, I do think, yeah, counseling, that's what I was going to suggest. You got to go to counseling, have, you know, the counselor, obviously, you tell them what's going on, and they can, I think, give you probably a far better answer or whatever direction than, you know, either you or I can. And, but on the other hand, I mean, if your wife is kind of open and free and, you know, maybe this isn't, won't be such a big deal. I mean, you know her, we don't. So,
yeah.
So I think if this is something that she can handle, I mean, I would talk to her about it. She may have some things in her, you know, in her mind that she wants to explore or whatever. And, you know, maybe you guys do it, you know, explore your things, you know, while you're still together and, you know, figure it out from there. I mean, you don't say if you have kids or anything, so I don't know if it's how complicated that is. But I think it really does depend on, I don't think you should go out and just go out and sleep with men. I don't think you should do that regardless.
Yeah.
I think at least talk to somebody. Either talk to your wife first if she can handle it, and if you don't think she can, then you talk to the count. You go do some counseling, and then take it from there.
Mm-hmm. I agree. Yeah, it's, and you know, you may find that I'm wondering, David, if you've had a conversation with your wife about your respective sexual interests, or did you both just kind of fall into the expected roles of husband and wife, man and woman, or have you, the two of you, really explored the full spectrum of your sexual interests? Not just any sort of fetish play, but also, does she have any interest in having sex or threesomes or swinging?
Yeah.
You know, I feel like those conversations should be had before you get married, because you want to know what's, what could pop up in 5 or 10 years. You know, your partner may be like, yeah, I've always wanted to do this. And it's like, well, damn, why didn't you tell me? We had all these deep conversations and pillow talk, and all of a sudden you popping up talking about you want to do this. Why you didn't tell her, brother? And I've maybe it's because I'm in relationships with men where we are a little more willing to have these conversations by and large, but certainly there are plenty of women out there that are like, look, this is what I want, you know. So yeah. It's not to say women don't have that inclination as well, but I think men tend to be a bit more brazen about it, perhaps, as opposed to just open about it, you know. But yeah, I think it's probably time for you to have a very frank conversation with your wife.
Yeah, I think a lot of men, in a sense, kind of ignore a lot of what society says is the right thing. So that's why I think it's kind of a little easier when it's men. But I think women are a little different. But, you know, he is younger. He's younger than me. You know, he's 35. So you have to assume the wife is, okay. I think he said he was 35. Yeah.
Yeah, he's 35. That's what I
So you have to assume that she's around the same age. So I think the younger generations, they're far more willing to explore outside of the traditional, you know, monogamous marriage. So this may be like it may not be a big thing to her. I mean, I don't know that, but I'm just saying it's possible. I think it's a higher possibility than he thinks. So
yeah, I think that certainly I'm happy that you're not totally ignoring how you're feeling, because that can run you crazy as well. That's a very slippery slope and a very dangerous one to go down, repressing your sexual interests and desires in that way. But I do think that you've got to take the next step and figure out what it is. And I believe you need to have a conversation with your wife about what are the sexual parameters and limits of your relationship. Because she'll tell you. And she may even say one thing and come back a week later and say, okay, so I was really freaked out, but I'm intrigued by this. I might be open to that, so on and so forth. Because it's a loaded topic. There are a lot of aspersions and assumptions made about people when you start talking about their sexual interests and what they've done and what they'd like to do. I think even for Dark Boy and myself, when we think about the show and the topics that we bring up, for me, the question is always, how much am I going to disclose about myself? And it's like, obviously, anyone with any sense is like, okay, he's in his mid-40s, and he's been out for a long time. He's not a virgin. He's done some things. But even a confirmation of what I have and have not done, or I guess what I have done, and in some cases have not, because there are some folks like, oh, you ain't done nothing serious yet, you know. You ain't been tied up and hanging on the ceiling, bitch, you ain't real, you know. It's like, I have had that said to me before, by the way.
Okay.
And I was like, well, let me remain fake, because you ain't tying me up and hanging me nowhere. History has taught me that is not a good thing. And so, which always brings me back to a certain leather man that you and I talked to at the coffee house one night.
Oh, yes.
Yes. Always brings me back to him. With his fine ass. I'm just like, ooh. But you know, I'm like, yeah, you can't do all that to me now. I don't know if I can.
Yeah, if you're ready for that.
Exactly. But I'm like, ooh, I could handle you in general. But okay. So, but yeah, so getting back on point. Start the process of at least figuring out what's really going on. Is it just an itch you need to scratch? Is this a part of your sexuality that's awakening, but you still are interested in your wife and you still want to be with her? You're still interested in the female form? Are you bi? Are you bored? Do you need some spice and some excitement? What is it? What is it exactly? Get some help with that. To find out what it is. Not to cure it, but just to really discover and understand. Explore and understand, rather. It's already discovered,
yeah.
So explore. And get a better understanding of it and how it factors into your life. Because the reality is, if this is really what you want to do, it has a huge impact on your life, because now you're going to start sneaking around, lying to your wife, making all these plans, taking time away from her in your marriage, potentially exposing her to different things.
Yep.
You know, as far as she's concerned, you're married, you're monogamous, there's no need for condoms and things. All of a sudden, there may be a need for them, and she didn't get the memo. That's fucked up. You can't do that to her. That's your wife. You love her, right? You don't do that to her. So, you've got to figure out what's going on with you and how this is going to play out. But I don't know. I'm done chatting. I've said enough this morning.
Yes, I think we... Well, David must let us know how that... What happens, how it works out. But, thank you. Yes. But anybody that wants to... You know, send a question to us for Ask Your Brister or Help a Brother Out. Go ahead and send your question to sexualhealingpod@gmail.com.
Okay. That is right. And we're also on Facebook at Sexual Healing from Top to Bottom. And we are on Twitter at PodSexual, PodSexual. And who knows? I might even start putting some stuff on Instagram soon. We're Sexual Healing Pod there. So definitely, you know, maybe I'll do some polls and some questions of folks, particularly on Facebook. Just starting to get some opinions and word on the street kind of things. It just comes down to time. We're both, like, incredibly busy. So we love doing the show. You know, we find those little nooks and crannies of time to record, but some of the extra stuff that really helps promote a show, we don't always get to. But we'd like to. I dream about doing it, but unfortunately I'm not awake when it's happening. And so, yeah. But definitely reach out. We'd love to hear from you. Let us know what you like. Let us know what you don't like. Some things, some missed opportunities, you know, some things that we didn't talk about it. We don't do from week to week. Things that you might want to hear. Let us know.
Yep.
We're open to it all. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. Well, we are currently at, on my end, 1 hour and 57 minutes, just about.
Yep.
By the time this is edited, it'll probably be down to 1 hour and 45-ish, hopefully. So, which is still well past our 1.5 hour ideal time. So, we're going to end it.
Yes.
So, did you want to send our listeners out with the positive word for the week?
Nope. Just be good. Protect yourself. Be nice to everybody.
Okay. Be a blessing, not a curse.
Yeah, that's a good one.
That's all I got. All right. Take care, y'all, and thanks for hanging out with us.
All right.
Talk to you next week.
Till next time.